you talk about the internal force, internal workforce, the Chinese internal workforce, contrasted with the external workforce. The fact is, with the external markets, I'm sorry. Now, the fact is, the Chinese economy can't grow at the rate it has done over the past few years, given the recession. The fact is, China isn't recession-proof. And figures given to you by the Economist is totally false. It cannot grow by 8%. It's not viable. It simply isn't viable.
It's pure speculation on your part.
But it's not viable. It isn't viable at all.
However, you have to ask yourself, why is it that there is no serious economist in the world arguing that China's economy will grow less than 6.5%? No serious economist in the world. Therefore, why is it that an economy such as that can grow at 6.5%?
You shouldn't take the word as gospel.
My friend, we're dealing with contentions here,
made
by senior economists in the World Bank, the IMF, you name it, right? Now, they could be wrong. I think they are wrong. I think they underestimate the rate of growth in China simply because of an ideological obsession that the only growth that can happen in the world is capitalist growth. They can't understand it. Because they always turn around, and that's after all the argument I get every week at Speaker's Corner, isn't it? One second. I get every week at Speaker's Corner the argument, well, your system cannot work. Where has it ever worked? It leads to economic disaster. And the argument I'm making is quite simple. The fact of the matter is, in spite of the bureaucracy in China, in spite of corruption, in spite of autocracy, in spite of too much capitalism, in my opinion, in China, because the banks are state-owned, because the commanding heights are state-owned, that economy is growing faster than any other in human history. A simple fact. And that fact alone determines the fate of the planet. Simple as this. Because if a country and if an economy is able to develop faster than the other economies, then it becomes the model. Why did Thatcherism and Reaganism become the model? Why? Because the Soviet Union was unable to develop its economy. Britain and America appeared to have found some golden or some magic wand whereby if you only sell everything that's in state ownership, then there'll be capital acquired within the society. Fictitious capital, but capital acquired.
But then it's siphoned off.
With that, you can strengthen your control over the world's financial markets. You can suck in money from every gangster and crook in the world, as well as individuals, if you only sell them a piece of paper saying you own a house. Then, of course, you get them to pay anything, can't you? And if you sell them a television program, telling them if they buy a house, they're not buying a house, they're buying an ATM. And all they have to do is go to their wall every night, touch it and pray for a rise in property prices, and abracadabra, 2 years ago, £350 a day comes out of the wall of your house. That's what they did. And with that, not only was that magic, but with that £250 a day, you can, of course, turn around and become a valuable commodity yourself. Because that £250 a day coming in means you're not worth £250 a day. Oh, no, no, no. You're worth whatever you can borrow at 5% for £250 a day.
That's an MP's
attendance
allowance.
In other words, £500,000
MP's
in exchange for the amount of interest you can pay. And that's how we ended up with this massive global bubble in which Britain has become the most indebted country in the whole of human history. And now we're being made to pay. And my friends, the only way out of it is public ownership of the banks, democratic control of what's done with those banks' resources, and democratic control through the banking system of the commanding heights of the economy. That's what controls the commanding heights. If we own the banks, and we supposedly do own the banks, and we democratically control the banks, then we can use the banks as the economic lever to determine what is done. We can compel them to invest. Yes, it is that easy. It's precisely what they're doing in China. And they shifted the economy from an export-based economy 3 months ago to an economy based on internal investment now. That's been done in 3 months in a country of 1.3 thousand million people.
I mean,
in other words, twice the population of Europe. And therefore, the idea that it cannot be done in Europe or America is totally false. The reason it is not done is because the rulers of America and the rulers of Europe are hand in glove with the thieves who stole the money in the first place. That's the reality. Even down to the most minimal expenses to download a porno film. Everything must be paid. Everything must be paid by the state to the gangsters and crooks, and their affinities with these people run deep and are the essence of their relationship. Tony Blair goes out of office, and as soon as he leaves office, he goes and gets jobs speaking at £1 million a meeting. That is why his understanding of what was happening to Britain and his understanding of the attitudes of the mass of the population was totally out of sync with the real moods of the masses.
He was nothing.
That's
more
why
than
Gordon Brown could not understand.
To begin with.
Could not understand that the entire economy of Britain. God, do you remember how many years he was talking about prudence? He was talking about no boom and bust. Can't you remember? That was the mantra for the last 12, 13, 14 years. No return to boom and bust. Now we have the biggest economic collapse since the 1930s. And it will be a prolonged, drawn out decline of Britain as a power, not only internally, but on a world scale. And then this great power, Great Britain, still wants to parade around the world as the leader of the world. Still wants to go and tell countries, you can't do this, you can't do that. Listen to us, because we're so clever.
Why?
We've got the financial system in London. Why? Because these rulers of Britain are the same gangsters and crooks through family ties, through background, through historical affinity, the same gangsters and crooks who originally established capitalism 400 or 500 years ago by founding the slave trade set up by the City of London bankers and financiers and Jardine and the East India Company and the Royal Africa Company, which plundered the world's resources, plundered human beings to acquire the capital, which they then created the City of London to dominate world capitalism with in the first place. The same people, the same interests, the same psychology. And it is that class of people, the bankers and the landlords and the capitalists, who must be overthrown by a democratic revolutionary change which demands democratic control and public ownership of the commanding heights of the economy. Otherwise, the economy will stumble from one crisis to another. And the mass of the population will be made to suffer. At the moment, it won't be one war. But when it comes down to it, just as in the 1930s or prior to the First World War, when capitalism entered crisis, one mechanism for their resolution of the crisis is to engage in conflict with another country.
Okay. I mean, the reason...
Here. Have you been to Mexico? Just in case.
The reason why the... I just want to say...
Carried away, I'm frozen.
The reason why...
You've had a fair crack.
Quiet now.
Someone else.
The reason...
You've had a fair crack. I'll come back to you later.
The reason why the British economy was stronger in the 60s is because of what you were saying about public ownership and also high taxation, because you mentioned a figure of 90%. Well, the rich were paying 83%, which was close to that. Back in the 60s. So presumably we were closer to socialism.
That in the 1960s, the economy was more insulated.
Yeah.
One, because a larger proportion of the economy was in public hands, but also because there was more of a national development of economies at that time. Now we have the global integration of the world economy. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Now we have the global integration of the world economy. All that is past, at least for the time being. However, as the economies collapse and the danger of war is real, and where is the danger of war real? Well, it's in the same areas where war broke out in the Second World War and war broke out in the First World War. It is that dividing line between those countries that have entered the period of economic development, industrial development, to an advanced level with high living standards, and those that have not, and in particular Eastern Europe and the areas between, if you like, from the Adriatic until the Baltic, the same area they talked about in the Cold War. These countries are on the edge of complete economic collapse. I met a labour organiser last week who was at my meeting here. He came up to me and explained to me, he went for a drink in the pub, he explained to me the situation in Ukraine. I don't know if any of you followed it. In the Ukraine, if you go to your ATM machine and you put your piece of plastic in the wall and you ask for your money, nothing comes out. There is no money in the banks there, even though people know they've got money in there. Nothing comes out of the machine. That's the situation in Ukraine.
That's the worst possible scenario.
Sorry?
30 years ago, they didn't even have ATMs. That's the problem.
Oh, well, they don't have ATMs now. My friend, they don't have ATMs now. The issue is, when people's expectations are raised and then dashed, that's when you get blood, my friend. In 1912, Germany was developing as the most rapidly developing economy in the world. By 1919, because of the sudden collapse of Germany, that's what gave birth to the fascist movement, and also prior to that to the communist movement. We have entered a period of revolution and counter-revolution, of global crisis of capitalism and the crisis of confidence within that system. And as people draw conclusions about that, there will be a massive polarization, there will be wars, there will be revolutions, and there will be counter-revolutions. On the contrary, where's the bankruptcy? Why don't you specify what you mean, rather than just make... Where's the exaggeration? Where's the exaggeration?
Not to say that there will be wars.
What, wars ended, have
they? No. Listen, if anything at all, you've got the Middle East. And there is an unresolved situation in the Middle East.
We've had enough wars in the Middle East.
The fact is, that might come back to the fore. What to say?
The Chinese and Russian ask for a reserve currency rather than the dollar. The dollar, at the moment, America prints money to pay for, you know, the economic investment.
At the moment.
And pays for European as well. You talk about the collapse of the Soviet Union. I mean, Soviet Union didn't collapse without a reason, because they didn't have the reserve currency. I mean, they fought the Soviet Union because of a sanction.
The currency in the Soviet Union was an internally determined currency.
Yeah, but they
in other words, the fact that the economic planning system in the Soviet Union was total meant that the currency's value was determined internally by diktat. In other words, as soon as it tried to exchange goods for Russian rubles, it was impossible. Outside of the Russian economy or the Soviet bloc economies. Now, one of the examples of the increasing tension, other than the points I made earlier about the naval parade in China, is the fact that they just announced yesterday, I think it was the government in China announced, they've got 1,000 tons of gold stored, risen from 600 tons only a couple of years ago. What there is a battle going on for the global control of society. And if you like, what gave birth to the Second World War and the First World War was precisely the same conflict about global interests on a world scale, on which countries and spheres will be dominated by which nations and their rulers. And so elements, not the same, but elements of the conflict which gave birth to the First and Second World War are also present today. However, the gentleman here asked me, is fascism a likely scenario in the present time? Well, in countries like Britain or America, or in Western Europe, I think fascism is an unlikely candidate for the seizure of power, for a number of reasons. One, because of the long historical experience of democratic rights. Two, because the economic crisis has only just begun. And so in the short term and intermediate term, it's unlikely there would be a serious fascistic movement. That doesn't mean there wouldn't be fascist movements which will attempt violently to repress and to split working class people on the basis of race or the basis of religion. It is a very serious question, and it merits a very serious reply, because it is not just a question about Western Europe or North America. Precisely the areas of the world where so-called communism collapsed is where there is a very strong neo-Nazi movement. In Russia, in the Ukraine,
Poland.
In Eastern Europe, in Poland, in Lithuania, Latvia, and the former Soviet republics, there are genuine fascist movements. That means paramilitary organizations. And I remember when I was in East Germany, at the time of the collapse of East Germany, there were Russian soldiers selling submachine guns to Nazi gangs in Germany for 200 marks a shot. 200 marks a shot. Those weaponry are still at the disposal of some groups, and there are groups in Germany with significant funds, and also in America, and we shouldn't underestimate the impact of that either. Because in America, the election of Obama has been a green light, or better said, a red flag to a bull to the extreme right wing in the United States of America. They think the United States of America has been taken over by communists. And therefore there is a danger, of course, that sections within the United States of America, if they have economic power at their disposal, would be prepared, I noticed that, yeah, would be prepared to offer primarily finance and resources to Nazi movements in countries where they really are a serious threat.
So, if the dollar is not the main currency...
It's a misunderstanding to think that any power in the world is anywhere near being able to challenge the economic might of the United States of America. Because that is a false illusion.
They've got, because it's the main currency in the world. I mean,
yes,
you want to buy anything.
It's not just because it's the main currency of the world.
You want to buy
anything. It is recognized because, it's not just, if I turn around to you and say, take this, this is worth 5 pence. You take it as long as you think it's worth 5 pence. If I turn around to you and say, take it, it's 5 pence, and you say, I'm not giving you my jumper for these 5 pence. If I pull out a gun, you'll give it and take the 5 pence, right? The United States of America is the most powerful military force on earth. And therefore, in spite of its defeat in Iraq, it still is the main power projection militarily across the world for the foreseeable future. 3,000 ships move around the world transporting the goods that constitute world trade. The shipping lanes are guarded and protected in the national interest of the United States of America by the US Navy. And for that reason, until such time as another country is able to challenge the naval power of America, America will maintain its domination of world markets.
So
simple as that.
If we have a reserve currency, not United States dollar,
who's we?
I'm saying about Switzerland currency. It's a main currency.
Are you from Switzerland?
Is the Soviet Union at that time, I mean, will be still in power? Like, because they wanted, like, they had economic sanction against the Soviet Union. They don't have the enough dollars to buy anything from the West.
There are two elements, aren't there? The currency is based on the productive power of a country.
And by
the economic weight by the productive power of the country. The United States produces nearly 30 times as much per capita as China does. And therefore the idea per capita, I mean per capita production, per the workers who work there's more Chinese, of course, but the workers who work in America are that much more productive. The productive power, the economic might of America way exceeds that of China. Its total economic size is more than twice the size of the Chinese economy. I believe that's correct, twice the size of Chinese economy. And so the idea that, you know, that any country can battle against America today is wrong. In the world economic sphere, America dominates 7/10 of world trade in the US dollar. So that idea is, the question is not about a battle between China and America. That won't resolve anything. The question is an internal struggle by the working class on a world scale, including the United States of America, against the ruling class.
Yes.
That's the issue.
Yes.
It's not a battle between one country and another. There will be battles between one country and another, inevitably because of the economic crisis. But I don't think there's any possibility of there being an alternative reserve currency being created by any alternative bloc. Because for a start, when you talk about America, America's not alone. It has its allies. And it has many allies. Not only does it have allies, but it has 600 countries with bases, American bases. What other country is anything near that? So the idea that that will be altered by a change of European policy or Sino-European cooperation, that's wrong.
Or by Obama.
I think it's wrong. In any case, that's my projection. I think it's wrong.
America dominates the world market. How did the economy go to steal?
Well, America dominates the world market, but it dominates it through a system called capitalism. And capitalism is a system of production for profit. The country doesn't dominate its economy. The economy dominates the country. And who owns the economy? The capitalists own the economy. Not the American people, but private individuals. And those private individuals produce for profit. When they invest for profit, they seek to make the maximum profit they can at any moment. But in order for me to compete against him, and him to compete against him, I have to increase my productivity. I have to produce more of the same thing that he's producing, I'm producing, and you're producing. And therefore I need new machinery. As I increase the quantity of machinery that I spend, out of my total investment, I reduce the component of labor power. And thereby I reduce the amount of profit. The profit rate declines gradually over a prolonged period of 10, 20, even 30 years. But once that profit rate reaches a certain level, then ensues a global crisis of capitalism. The inability, the tendency for profit to decline, causes a contraction in the marketplace. Then they are dependent upon the destruction of capital. What does destruction of capital mean? Look around London today. Only a year ago, everything was des res. Expensive, high prices, the best place in the world to live. Everything's going to keep booming. Now you only have to walk 20 or 30 meters from Speaker's Corner, Park Lane after all, it's on the Monopoly map, number 2 in the world. Walk a couple of meters from Speaker's Corner and you will see derelict buildings falling down. There's one right over there. See that one behind the tree there? The one on the corner, built around 1850. It's been empty 25 years. It's got a sign on the door, barricade boarded up on the outside, says property maintenance. Property maintenance. Keeping a building empty and letting it degenerate whilst people sleep on the floor in front of the building. That's what they call logic of capitalism. The marketplace. Because the marketplace is actually dominating society. The capitalists don't decide what happens. The capitalists themselves are driven by the search for profit like maniacs.
In other words, you're saying what Marx said, morally they're not free themselves.
They also are not free themselves, quite correct. The capitalists themselves are slaves to their own system. But of course, I'm not arguing for their moral transformation. They themselves are slaves to their own condition. That doesn't mean that they would. One or two will change. One or two. But the overwhelming majority of them will seek to maintain their wealth and power by any means necessary. And the government, the army, the police, the judiciary, look at what happened with this Tomlinson guy. They beat the people up, and the police, what are they doing? Defending the G20. Who are the G20? The G20 are the people who led the world economy to the edge of economic abyss in the autumn, and between September last year and the present month, April this year, 200 million people have been driven officially to the point of hunger. 200 million people. And when people protest about that, they're encircled by riot police and beaten. This is what they call democracy and justice. In East London, 2 weeks ago, workers in a Ford subsidiary were told, because the company had worked out, if we sell this off, we can make money and not pay the redundancy payment to the workers for Ford. So the workers occupied the factory. When they occupied the factory, 100 police arrived in riot gear and sticks, roaring, and dogs roaring to beat the workers up, who only the day before were producing the wealth of Ford Motor Company. Now the British government turns around and says, do they give a subsidy of £2,000 to the population? No. They say, if you hand in your old car, then we'll subsidise the car industry. In other words, the profits of the billionaires who own the car industry, they're going to get the subsidies from the state, just as the bankers got subsidies from the state. Not the workers. They're not to be kept on. They're not to have their wages increased, which might increase demand. They're not to have credit given to them at a low interest rate if they're on certain income by government banks. No, they are told their wages must be cut. It's tighten your belts, cut back on social services, cut back on school spending, cut back on healthcare, cut back on welfare. And there are many parasites in Britain, we are told. Unemployed parasites, people feigning illness, refugees arriving and taking our jobs. This is the type of nonsense they want you to think about. Terror. Terror in our midst. So what do? Arrest 14 Pakistanis. Turns out it was all lies. Not a single case to answer.
As usual.